That's good. Are these IKEA?
Those are IKEA. These are Crayola.
They say right from the Crayola store.
Does that not say IKEA on it?
No, it says Mala.
Well, that's Swedish for meatball marker.
Meatball pen.
Meatball pen.
Who wants a meatball pen? Hello, Avalanche fans, and welcome back to the Avs Hockey Podcast. This is your home for almost everything Avalanche, and I'm your host, Jay Veen. In this show, my man James Tapeleg Granlund and I review the playoff series against the Wild. We tell you who's up for postseason awards. We discuss the offseason and potential moves. We answer your hashtag AskAHP questions. And James and I simply say thanks for a great season. Those topics and much more coming at you in episode number 90 of the Avs Hockey Podcast. Stick around. James and I will be right back. Hello, Avalanche fans, and welcome back to the Avs Hockey Podcast. He's James Tapeleg Granlund, and I'm Jay Veen.
Hello.
And this is your home for almost everything Avalanche for the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
And it was over.
Is it the offseason?
Yeah, I guess so. If you're a real Avalanche fan, yeah. If you're a hockey fan, it's hard to watch other hockeys, I guess.
I still like watching the other hockeys.
I do too, but it's not as...
I don't like watching Minnesota win right now.
Hanging right in there.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Same stuff as before.
Yeah.
Take the body. And the knee is part of the body, just so you know.
Another knee episode last night. Spurgeon did the knee.
Yeah.
Did you see that play?
I did not see the play.
He got called for an elbow, but he actually went knee to knee. So, Okay. We'll talk about that.
What episode is this?
This is the Ryan O'Reilly edition of the Avs Hockey Podcast.
Episode number 37 of the Avs Hockey Podcast?
37 times 3 minus 21.
Oh.
Math is hard.
Nice math.
Thanks. Appreciate it. This is episode number 90 of the Avs Hockey Podcast. Your home for almost everything Avalanche.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure why Ryan O'Reilly changed his number.
I don't know.
But he did.
37 didn't seem like a very... It's not a hockey number that you really associate with anything. You know, obviously the double digits you associate with things. Number 19 is a big hockey number, obviously, for many teams. One, you're 30 through 35 as goalies, obviously.
True.
But yeah, 37 is just kind of nondescript.
I mean, it's Drury. It's Drury Glory Days Avalanche.
But yeah.
I still don't know why. And I never heard that story. But he changed to 90, what? Oh, after the 11-12 season. Yeah. So there it is.
Do you have any 37 jerseys? Or do you just have 90s for your O'Reillys?
I don't have any O'Reillys.
You don't have any O'Reillys?
No.
Wow. Are you mad at him because of the him holding out
time? I am furious with him. No, I am not mad at him. It's just been one of those things where it's hard to find this model they're wearing.
Mm.
So basically the best thing to do is you buy game issued of guys that never played.
Right.
And you strip them. And then you have, I made a couple Landeskogs that way. I'm thinking about stripping one, and Wes O'Neill, who doesn't need to.
Yeah, I remember Wes O'Neill.
Maybe make that a, no, you don't.
Yeah, I do.
You do?
Yeah.
All right. Maybe make a Duchesne.
I don't remember him well, but I do remember that he played, and I remember that he wasn't, that there was like, he was kind of one of those guys, like, he was like a microcosm of Svatos, where you thought that there was some potential there, and then just suddenly there wasn't.
That happens a lot.
Yeah. It does happen. Yeah.
I'm thinking of it's tough for guys that actually played, like Patrick Rissmiller were the two jerseys that I stripped to make my Landeskogs, and nobody's ever heard of him. And he'll never play for the Avs. Obviously, they let him go after they made those jerseys. So there's that. But I ordered an O'Reilly. I ordered a set two white jersey. I pre-ordered a set two white jersey from this season. It should be here sometime soon. Cool. It's too small for me to wear, though, because I am
Shrek-sized. Ginormous.
Shout out to Herschel Meister and his nephew, Chuddy, who...
Chuddy.
We love Chuddy. We see him at the games. He's all geared up. He brings his gloves. He's got his shoulder pads on.
Mm-hmm.
He's ready to play. But Ryan O'Reilly comes out and has a routine that he does with Chuddy. Every time Chuddy's there, Hersch told me this is what Ryan O'Reilly does, and I will post the video to it in the...
A little bit of a glass check with Chuddy.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
It's great stuff. So if you need a reason to like Ryan O'Reilly even more, that video will help. So Renarelli was the 33rd overall pick in the 2009 draft and has been fabulous for the Avalanche ever since.
This is just an interesting thing to me that you know, people are pretty much fine with O'Reilly. You know, he did the holdout and now nobody really cares. But the NHL did their little lockout and people are still mad. I just love the dichotomy there.
I never thought about that.
I didn't either until just now, and I'm not even sure it's a complete thought. But it's, you know.
It's pretty close.
It came out.
It's pretty close. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, so we'll wrap up the season for you here.
We haven't done a game since right before the final game of the season. We didn't even know when the Avalanche were going to finish.
Or if they would have, or if they were going to win the division.
There was all
that stuff was still up in the air.
We knew they were in the playoffs. We knew that they were, you know, but we did not know what was going to happen with the Blues.
It turns out that the Avalanche didn't even have to play a game to win the division.
Yeah.
Because on April 13th, the Red Wings beat the Blues in regulation and the Avs clinched the Central Division.
Woohoo!
Who would have thought that at the beginning of the year?
Yeah.
First division championship for the Avalanche since 2002-2003. Mm. There was also a tweet that got deleted later, so it may have been inaccurate, but it's close to something like this. The Avalanche became the first team in 30 years to have the first pick in the draft and win their division the season after.
Mm.
That may have been inaccurate. Maybe they weren't the only team. I didn't see anything else, but
I know that since then they were first to go from bottom three to top three.
I know that for a fact. Facts involved. Is it this tweet? Avs are the first team since 1979 expansion to go in one season from the bottom three to the top three.
Maybe.
And I love that.
It's a fact.
Nobody would have guessed that. Everybody would have taken it. It helps me feel better about kind of the abrupt end to the season.
Mm-hmm.
I find it very interesting. The media went from what a season to what went wrong. There was a headline in the Post in the Sports that was like, what went wrong with the Avalanche's season now? And it's like, so many things went right, except for the Corsi stats. You love stats, right?
Yeah, advanced stats.
Don't get me started with.
We'll talk a little bit about. You want me to talk about advanced stats right now?
We can do that for sure, because it's an I told you so thing, and a lot of people look at those and say, I told you this was going to happen, and then it did, and then they're happy.
Right, but the advanced stats, the Corsi, the Fenwick, I'm coming out.
The Stamkosi.
the Snuggie, mm-hmm. The Snuggie stat. How many Snuggies there are? There is not.
I saw an Snuggie at the game.
Really?
Yeah, I saw one.
The thing is, it's not a Snuggie. There, Snuggie doesn't make one. It's a comfy throw or something like
bootleg
that.
Bootleg Snuggie.
It's like an off-brand Snuggie, and I'm sure that somebody's gonna is listening right now from
that.
The comfy throw, you know, and they're going to be writing a cease and desist order, you know. Yeah. Dear sir, I recently purchased one of the comfy throws, and I was very satisfied with its quality. For you to call it a knockoff or an off-brand is ridiculous. Ridiculous.
It's a preposterous.
Signed, Fenwick Corsi. Anyways, so basically what the Fenwick and Corsi stats were saying was that the Avs, you know, don't have enough possession of the puck to do anything. And what I didn't like about this, aside from, you know, the fact that, you know, it's just, you know, it's basically, you know, Dungeons and Dragons at this point, is that there's a certain I told you so when eventually that one team, you know, when eventually the one team out of 30 wins the cup, that, you know, there was going to be, nobody predicted that the Avs were going to get through the second round, basically.
Nobody predicted the Avs were going to, I mean, at the beginning of the year,
right.
I think everybody predicted maybe after the first quarter of the year that the Avalanche were going to fall off the face of the earth.
Right.
And they never did.
And essentially they kept waiting for it to happen. And then finally when they get to the playoffs and they lose in the first round, that's when the I told you so's came out. And it's like, wait a minute, you told me so, you know, that
you
this
told
was
me so
happen months
like
ago.
30 games into the year that the Avalanche were not going to keep this pace up.
Right. And then it took another 52, 54, 56 for that to happen.
Get
over yourself.
So the chances are, I guess if you want to think big picture, 29 out of 30. Mm-hmm. But let's think about maybe the bottom third of the Corsi stuff, maybe mm-hmm. 15. Chances are, you know, 14 out of 15 that you're going to say I told you so. Because everybody falls off the face of the earth except for one team.
Everybody regresses to the mean at some point, but the Avs never really regressed to the mean that people expected them to, nor that the advanced stats told everybody that it was going to happen. It happened in the first round of the playoffs, and it really is hard to disagree with that.
Yeah.
But the I told you so's, I'm not impressed.
That gets old pretty quick.
It gets old, but it also doesn't really accurately say anything. It was saying that something was going to happen. It couldn't say when, and then when it finally did, people were like, oh, I told you it was going to happen.
Oh, I'm not surprised at all. Well, you can be surprised out of the 15 to 16 teams that don't win the playoffs.
Yeah. So anyways.
I hear you. I'm with you with that.
And you know what? The truth is I really need to dig a little bit more into advanced stats. If I were to, I would like to pay a little more attention to it just to see.
So you're informed?
Yeah.
That makes one of us, because I really don't care.
Yeah, I mean, I care in that I can see some of the issues that the advanced stats had with what the Avalanche were doing.
Right.
What I have a problem with is the whole, well, this was so obvious. And you know what? No, it wasn't.
No. There's no way. And I mean, again, what a season.
Yeah.
Totally unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
A lot to build on. And still a lot to improve on. They won the division.
And we're going to talk about some things that happened that obviously had more of an impact than, you know, advanced stats.
Oh.
Yeah.
Game two?
Yeah. Game three?
Three.
Yeah.
Let's chat.
All right. So we'll get to game three when we get to it.
April 13th, yeah, earlier in the day, the Blues losing to the Red Wings.
Mm-hmm.
Yay, Red Wings. We can say that for one game, yes?
Well,
it's not that we were rooting for the Red Wings. We were rooting against the Blues. That was the best way I heard
good.
That. Yeah.
That feels good.
Feel better that way?
Yeah.
Good. So that made the
we're still fans. We're still fans. There's no problem with that.
It's all right. Yeah. We're all right. April 13th, it made the game in Anaheim pretty much useless.
Mm-hmm.
Team Solani's last regular season home game in Anaheim.
Mm-hmm.
They let him wear the C, and he also did a little victory lap with Jiggy, which was really cool.
He took his own victory lap, grabbed Jiggy's hand, took a victory lap with him, and that was awesome.
After the winning goal went in, somehow, mm-hmm, some way, the puck made its way back to Jiggy. Jiggy gave Solani the puck when he came and did the
oh, nice.
Did you see that part?
I didn't notice that.
It's in the video. It's posted in the post for the show.
Mm-hmm.
Check it out. Just okay. Total class. That's why everybody likes both of those guys. They're classy. Random note from the end of the season, Nathan MacKinnon and Gabriel Landeskog are the only rookies in NHL history to have played 82 games with 20 or more goals with a plus and minus over 20.
Ooh.
That's pretty big. I know you're not big on plus and minus, but when it gets to a number like that, it says all it needs to. So, shout out to Av's tweets,
mm-hmm,
on the Twitters. Thanks. I forgot his first name. Nicolette. All right. That's not his first name, by the way. That would be weird. All right. And then we're on to the playoffs.
Maybe he's Swedish. Who knows?
Could be.
Yeah.
Probably not.
I mean, is Jan?
No, it's definitely not.
Okay.
Jan.
See? It's, you know, C. What I'm saying?
I'll look it up.
I'm saying, like, is Jan a weird name when you consider that he's not, you know, from the U.S.?
No.
Okay. Just checking.
Up yonder.
All right, yay.
Don't start. I will turn this podcast around, although I don't have access to the controls.
So then we got to the playoffs.
We got to the playoffs. Yeah, let's please move on. Thursday, April 17th, game one against the Minnesota Wild at Pepsi Center,
mm-hmm,
and the Avalanche win 5-4.
You were not at this one?
I was at games 2, 5, and 7.
Okay.
Gabriel Landeskog starts the scoring in the first, which made someone an Avs Twitter psychic winner.
Oh, was that me?
No. You always pick MacKinnon. Ryan O'Reilly ties the game at 2 in the second period. Avs go into the third down 4-2.
Mm-hmm.
Game's over, right?
Oh, yeah, man. Just like the regular season. Whenever they go down two goals, it was over.
According to the Corsi stats, the rest of this game is canceled. We're not going to play it anymore.
They might as well just institute the mercy rule right then and there. Clock run.
Sorry, people. Sorry, yeah, running clock. Running That's clock. What it would have been, yeah. Jamie McGinn gets the Avs within one halfway through the third. Patrick Waugh, I know this is crazy. It blows my mind. Patrick Waugh pulls Varley like he does with 3 minutes left in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Stastny with 13 seconds left in the game. The puck stuck in the top of the net like it did with Tange with his first goal in game 7 in 2001.
Nice.
Nobody's quite sure whether it went in or not because it stuck right behind
the bar.
It was pretty awesome. Bar down. Let's see. Paul Stastny then wins the game 7-27 in overtime. Magic. Max Talbot. Credit to Max Talbot. I posted a link to the highlight. He was out there in the Avalanche's offensive zone just before this goal was scored, and he must have gotten whistled at because that's what Patrick Waugh does.
Yeah, he throws out.
You can see him while the puck's in the zone, skate off, gets MacKinnon on,
mm-hmm,
and Nathan MacKinnon joins the play that leads to the primary assist on the game winner. Fabulous stuff. Here's some stats, and pay attention to the hits for sure. EJ, an assist and 4 shots. Nate Ginnon had 8 hits in this game. Jamie McGinn, a goal assist, 3 shots and 5 hits. Cody McLeod had 6 hits. Ryan O'Reilly, goal and assist. Gabriel Landeskog, a goal, 4 shots, 3 hits. And Nathan MacKinnon had 3 assists in his playoff debut. He's the first rookie to record 3 assists in his playoff debut in basically NHL history.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Thoughts on this game? Did you lose your mind?
I lost my mind somewhat. It was mm-hmm. awesome. Here's the thing that and they're still talking about it as though it was brand new. You and I have seen Patrick Waugh pull the goaltender early many times.
Yeah.
Apparently, the rest of the hockey world that doesn't live in Colorado has not seen this because they're still freaking out about it.
That was against all Corsi rules.
Right. That would be the Patrick.
Other teams are starting to do it right away.
Right, and now everybody's like, "Oh man, Patrick Waugh! I can't believe they did that." And in this game, it's like, well, the rest of us can't actually believe it because we've seen it before.
That's right.
Where have you guys been paying attention?
Shout out to Mark Rycroft, Kyle Keefe. They actually included my question in Ask the Analyst, mm-hmm. and my question was, do you think other teams will start doing what Patrick Waugh is doing?
Mm-hmm.
Rycroft said most likely next year because it makes sense. I mean, Patrick Waugh's explanation has always been, I want to give my team more time to take care of what needs to be taken care mm-hmm. of. You pull the goalie with a minute and a half left, they have to hurry around. He tries and goes, you know, two and a half, gives his team more time, shows confidence in the team. It's paid off many times.
I mean, if you're going to pull the goalie with 3 minutes left, okay, and you're not a team that can keep possession of the puck, then you're going to get hosed. Oh, look, it's worked out many times because the Avs keep possession of the puck. It's amazing how many times this happens.
It's weird when they don't score. Was this the one that EJ...
Busted or what? No, that was previous. That was a previous game when EJ busted down the ice and swatted away at the last moment.
No, that was this.
That was this game.
That was this game.
That was this game. Yeah. Oh, what?
That puck was a foot away from going in and ending the game. And then who shoots the puck at EJ while he's sitting in the net that's obviously dislodged? Matt Cook.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that part. But after EJ does that, he bangs it in the net. He's kind of on one knee. The net is off by probably a couple feet.
Yeah.
Matt Cook shoots it at the net right at EJ, and that's what Matt Cook does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is a good thing that they didn't call EJ for knocking the
net
off.
No, he was just trying to make a play.
They could have, but, you know.
I didn't see the PK Subban, but everybody was talking about it that he was like, oops.
The thing is, like, I guess why you wouldn't call it is because he played the puck before anything else happened. But it could have been called for delay of game, quote unquote.
It could have, but they wouldn't have. It's not like he sprayed the goalie and got called for unsportsmanlike.
Oh, man, that is awful.
Yeah.
When you do that.
We're going to talk about that. You do that all the time in your league, right?
Oh, man. I bring a water bottle, and I literally squirt him right in the face.
Take that.
With iodine.
Oh, well played. Iodine. E-Y-E. Never mind. Paul Stastny, 2 goals and assists in this game. Stastny becomes the first player in Stanley Cup playoff history to score the game-tying goal in the last 15 seconds of regulation and score the overtime game-winning goal. Elias Sports or Elias Sports?
I don't know. Whoever, I think it's French. It's El Wall.
Whoever they are, they have a lot of time on their hands. But also Stan Naratka on Twitter, at SMN013. Cool stats every once in a while. It doesn't overwhelm me with them. Paul Stastny had the game-tying goal on the winner in overtime. How many shots did he have the whole game?
Two shots.
That's a good shooting percentage. Thank you, Paul Stastny. Paul Stastny, I think he might have earned himself a little money
in this
playoff run. I think that's the Paul Stastny that a lot of people have been waiting for.
Mm.
Have you been waiting for that, Paul Stastny?
Yeah.
I think we all have.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
It's about time.
All right. Avs up 1-0. We go into game 2.
There we go. So now we're talking. Yeah.
Now we're chatting.
We got to set you up with the next
Let's
game.
Get into
you can't
it.
Just say, like, okay.
James is going to take a few deep breaths, and here we go. All right. Saturday, April 19th, game 2 against the Minnesota Wild at Pepsi Center. The Avalanche win 4-2. Avs down 1-0 early. Nathan MacKinnon makes Jared Spurgeon look like.
It was ridiculous.
Like a peewee. I don't know.
Dude lost his footing. Let me just say one thing.
I can do that. I can do what Jared Spurgeon does, a little wag of the finger to
Puck Daddy and their blog for saying that Jared Spurgeon broke his ankles. Yes, we get it. It's a very cute, you know, it's a cute way of saying that he got all tangled up. He didn't actually break his ankles, and using that in the headline, not so much.
It's more of a basketball term, actually.
Is it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. When you cross somebody up like that and they fall over, that's called
basketball. Sucks. I'm going to say it right now. Basketball is only there for three reasons. There's 3 reasons that basketball is there. It's to get in the way of my hockey.
Okay.
It's to make really awful squeaking noises with shoes on floors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to make the ice really horrible when they lay down. When they have to pull up the floor for basketball really fast to go back to a real hockey game. I don't like basketball.
You really hate basketball.
I don't hate basketball. I loathe basketball.
You dislike it.
Yes. A basketball killed my cat when I was growing up and ran it over. No, that didn't happen. But
official, know. James Tape Leg Graylian, basketball not his favorite.
Yes.
So Nathan MacKinnon makes Jared Spurgeon look silly on his first career NHL playoff goal.
You got to watch it when you make those crossovers when your upper body the goal of a really good skater, like when you see these really good skaters and puck handlers and guys who can grab the puck behind them and stuff, the whole deal is basically like their upper body can do completely different things than their lower body. And this is an example of the upper body wanting to do something that the lower body is committed completely against.
We're not doing this.
You start doing a backwards crossover, and your guy, and that's when a player who has, you know, who's really good with the puck and the like, I mean, somebody who's like not Max Talbot, is going to say, hey, I'm going to go the other way because this guy can't do anything. It's like you just react to it, and all of a sudden the guy tries to do a backwards crossover to get a little more speed, maybe a quick change of direction. You go the other way, and Spurgeon just like tried. Oh, I think I better follow him. Oh, that's not going to happen.
And there he goes, yep. And Spurgeon on his can in the can.
And this is the thing about hockey. I was talking about this with a guy I was skating with the other day. Is that there? I can't think of another sport. Maybe you can. But I can't think of another sport where you use crossovers, where really your leg, where you do a crossover, where your one leg crosses in front of the other. Maybe like for a moment in football when you're staying with a guy in defense.
Defensive backs, yeah.
Right, but you're not.
As an outfielder in baseball, you do that too. Your first step, if you're going to go to your last, one.
Right.
Yeah.
Now look at like hockey players coming around the back of a net. You know, if you're picking up speed.
Oh, there's tons.
Going backwards, you know, you get a couple of them going. You know, but there's no other place that uses crossovers in the way that hockey does.
True.
And it's just so strange. It's so strange when you first start watching hockey, you're like, why didn't he go over here? Oh, that's good. Because he can't.
Because his feet can't go that way.
Because you can't just step. You've got these things on and that stuff.
And they're sharp and they do the things.
But a crossover will, you know, using the crossover in the right way and the wrong way is one of those things that just like, and when you see these guys out there and something like this happens, it's like, oh, there is a good time and there's a bad time.
Now I get it.
You know, so while a lot of people...
He was done either way. It's not like Spurgeon did anything wrong. There was just too much speed coming at him with too many moves. We're not blaming him because I would have ended up probably falling over way before that.
I would have been back at the red line. Are you kidding me? There's no way I would...
Hey, guys, there he goes. Get him. Get him.
Good. Go.
Can you pick me up, please?
But I think your casual observer of hockey is going to go, oh, look at that fool. And then, like, the person who's like, you know, like... really watching, like studying the game, or you know, like who plays or things like that. And I hate the whole I do hate the whole you know, well, if you don't play you don't know thing. But there are occasions when it's like, oh, you've never done this, so you don't really realize how hard it is to do.
Makes you appreciate MacKinnon a little bit, and it makes you feel bad for Spurgeon because you know he felt about that big.
Oh yeah.
Knowing there's some screen grabs that just
he felt like Setoguchi on his shootout attempt
when he bit.
Yeah. Maybe not as bad as who was it? It wasn't Wisniewski.
There's a couple of them.
Who was the one that basically caught a toe? Dennis Weidman when just he was totally with the Blues. He caught a toe pick.
He went
to
the boards, yeah?
Yeah.
He just
caught a toe pick and went way up.
Nice.
But also, you know, Nathan MacKinnon with his stick handling, the way that he's just bat, 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 back and forth. And there's so many times when I watch this, I'm like, will you stop that? You're going to lose the puck. And then it's like,
and then he doesn't
do it.
Like, he makes a sick pass or creates space for himself. He doesn't need much space. It's pretty awesome to watch the 18-year-old for sure. Gabriel Landeskog scored twice in the second period. First on a glove side snipe. The second I linked, and it's just one of the prettier goals you'll ever see. It was MacKinnon to Stastny behind his back to Landeskog. Just a gorgeous goal.
Lovely pass.
Brizgalov was pulled after the third goal, and we didn't see him until a few minutes left in the game.
Brizgalov.
Yeah. He was brutal, but he seems to be playing well enough lately. P.A. Parento scores an empty net goal that was called back on an offside, which was not an offside. Offside was kind of a hot topic in this in this series a little bit. Ryan Suter got mad that Parento shot it into the net when nobody heard the whistle and then took a cross-checking penalty because he thought Parento did that on purpose. The Wild score a shorthanded goal after this, 11 seconds after the Suter penalty. I was thoroughly confused at this point as far as what the heck was going on. But Paul Stastny scored an empty net goal to seal the win. Both Paul Stastny and Nathan MacKinnon, a goal and three assists.
Can I just interject?
You may, absolutely. Anytime you want.
If Pierre Parento had not been called offside on that, then Nathan MacKinnon wouldn't have gotten that point. He got 7 points in two games.
Oh, yeah.
So had that goal been allowed, that record, I think it was like a tie for most points by a rookie in the first two games,
right,
of the playoff.
Right.
It was either a tie or a record. I can't remember, but he had seven points. He would have only had six.
That's
had that
true.
Not been called off. So
he also got,
count
like,
your blessings.
He also got tackled on the empty net goal that wasn't called either, which is, I don't know. It was just kind of funky. Whatever. Let's see. Varley, 30 saves. MacKinnon, yeah, let's talk about MacKinnon's numbers. So here's yours. MacKinnon, 7 points, ties the NHL record for most points in his first two playoff games in his NHL career. So that wasn't just rookie. That could be anybody in their first two. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
The other two were Odey Cleghorn and Barry Peterson.
Man, oh, Odey Cleghorn.
Jeez. Man, that guy could play. Remember him?
Foghorn Cleghorn?
Hell yeah. We remember him a lot.
Foghorn Cleghorn.
And the most assists Nathan MacKinnon had in a game in the regular season was two, and he had three in the first two playoff games. MacKinnon is the third 18-year-old in NHL history to put up a four-point game in the postseason. He joins Pierre Turgeon and Trevor Linden there. The first 18-year-old to record six assists in a playoff year in his first two games. Adam Proto, Prototype on Twitter. If you don't follow him, please do. Nathan MacKinnon's is 18. His coach has a Stanley Cup ring older than he is. I love that one. And a big shout out to AHP fan Jacob Tashler. Second time he's come up and said hi. He's from Detroit.
Oh, nice.
He came down for this game and came up to say hi to me. Jared, right on. Good to see you again, bud. And that was it. Avs up 2-0. No problem, right?
Yep.
Everything's under control.
Series is wrapped up at this point.
Come on. That's what Corsi was saying at that point. The Avalanche in game three in Minnesota, they're outshot 46-22.
Oh, this was, yeah.
Yeah. Varley with 45 saves. And then Mikael Granlund scores the game-winning goal in overtime. Great effort. Beautiful goal. Ends up on a lot of the top overtime scores in the playoffs already. But then we've got Matt Cook.
Yeah. This was a really physical game overall, even without the Matt Cook incident, which, you know, obviously the knee on knee with Tyson Barrie takes him out of the playoffs, takes him out, you know, for, it's a 4 to 6 week MCL injury. I think MCL strain, mm-hmm. something like that.
Sprain.
Doesn't sound like a knee surgery. Mm-mm. But even everything else, I mean, there was a ton of physicality in this. Like, this was the gooning it up to get back in the series that Minnesota.
And that's what they do well. They're a physical team. I think that's the way they have to play in order to be, you know, they're not going to skate.
Which is too bad because they do have, I mean, they spent money on, you know, let's look at it this way. Okay. The Avs coming into this before the Mitchell injury, before the Duchesne injury. And at this point, Duchesne is still out of the playoffs.
Right.
You know, these are guys that, basically, like Minnesota, you look at their talent, and they spent a lot of money on two guys, which, okay, fine. But that's, you know, that's one defenseman, that's one forward. And you're building really a really good first line at this point. The Avs had, before the Mitchell injury, before the Duchesne injury, 2.5 good lines.
Yeah.
Or two and a half dangerous lines. Like, the first line and second line were
absolutely
basically interchangeable as which one was which.
I agree.
So the Wild had an opportunity to basically to skate with the Avs, but just don't have enough of that, in my opinion.
This was early in the second period, and I'd have a hard time, and I bet you a lot of Wild fans would agree with this, that the series was the same after Tyson Barrie left it. Tyson Barrie is the type of player that can stretch out that defense, stretch out that team a little bit, so they can't focus as hard on the forecheck because he's taken off. And, you know, Matt Cook gets 7 games. In those situations, it's going to be too many games for Wild fans or too few games for Avalanche fans. How are you with the 7 games?
I think that, you know what, there's an Ask HP question that's kind of, that talks about this. So you want to hit, so can we throw that in real fast?
Absolutely.
And get to that? Okay. So Rob Couch, my captain, actually, on one of my many, many teams that I play on.
Numerous.
Three this summer. I'm going to be tired. The questions. How much did Barry's injury hurt the Avs? Why wasn't the punishment worse? Should Cook have been kept out as long as Barry is kept out? And then he said, all the talk was about not retaliating because it would have been a distraction. What about next season? How ugly will that first wild game be? I may hit that last one first because I just don't think it's going to be that ugly. Because
no, someone will get a chance to send a message, and that all tends to work itself out. But if you go looking for that, it doesn't do anybody any good.
I got two words for you. Ben Lovejoy. That guy got away with a lot afterwards. There could have been a lot of retaliation, a lot of crap between the Ducks and the Avs, but they got down to the business. So I don't think that there's going to be a ton because we've seen Matt Cook do things before.
You've got to get in line with Matt Cook.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's a long line.
There's
a really long line of people that would like to get their shots at Matt Cook.
And we call those people the Boston Bruins.
Yes. The entire team.
So then Eric, I'm going to mispronounce his name, Dahutchik?
Yes.
That's
it right there.
From the Globe and Mail, wrote a little bit. He said, good news for those Matt Cook fans out there. There are Matt Cook fans on there.
Those go together.
And we call those guys the head coach of the Wild.
Yes, and his teammates. Yes.
The Minnesota Bad Boys scheduled to return for Game 4 of the Wild's second round series of the Blackhawks, which would mark the end of a 7-game suspension for knee Colorado Avalanche's Tyson Barry in the opening round. It means, for starters, that Cook's suspension won't cost him any actual salary. That would have only happened if Minnesota had been eliminated in the first round and his suspension had spilled over until the start of the next year. Minnesota was, on balance, the better team in the series, but Colorado didn't look the same offensively after they lost Barry. So players in the NHL are not getting paid. In the end, what they get, each team will get a lump sum of cash, and then they kind of divvy it up. It shares. Yeah. And but their salary isn't in play now. So yeah, he isn't going to lose any money over this.
Interesting.
So how much did Barry's injury hurt the Avs? In my opinion, where it really hurt was the power play. Benoit was not an adequate replacement for Barry on the point of the power play. And you know, neither was PA Parento.
Parento was there before any of this happened. I think they even tried to Shane at the point, which didn't work that well either. I've always said I'd rather see EJ there, but he plays enough already.
Well, you've got two lines,
right?
You know, two power play lines. Right. You've got to put him on one of them and not the other. So where I really think it would have hurt was there. Somebody also asked me on Twitter, you know, do you think that the Avs would have gotten a lot more goals or a lot more shots? Was it that because the Avs were getting outshot in this series quite a bit after
pretty
this.
Badly? Yeah.
I think the shots would have come on the power play more because Tyson Barry is not afraid of teeing it up. Neither is EJ.
Yeah.
And there are guys that just don't feel comfortable throwing it through traffic, don't feel comfortable with that slap shot. And, you know, we call those guys Benoit because he isn't. He doesn't take the shots from the point like that.
No, he's definitely not.
Why wasn't the punishment worse? This is the playoffs. The playoffs, every game that you miss in the playoffs is amplified, essentially. So, and we've seen this before. Seabrook. Probably would have gotten twice as many games had this been the regular season because it's the regular season. But your impact as an NHLer is much higher in the playoffs. So I think that's it.
Yeah. Overall, I think the power play struggled the entire series. That was before actually Barry got hurt, but I think it was amplified a little bit more after he got hurt.
Well, Minnesota is classically the good defensive team. They don't shy away from, and they've always had a good penalty kill no matter who's been coaching.
Yeah.
The last bit of the question was should Cook have been kept out as long as Barry's out? This is one of those weird things. Some people agree with that. The two philosophies are you suspend to the action or you suspend to the injury. And, it's a tough call. I stand more on the side of suspend to the action, but I think that most of the actions in the NHL don't get suspended heavily enough.
Yeah, I think some of it has to do with intent, and you can't measure intent.
It's hard to measure intent.
Yeah.
What I think is that, you know, 7 games isn't bad in the playoffs. You could have done the rest of this round, the rest of the next round.
Yeah. But you just don't know how long that's going to be.
Right.
And I think I'm sure there's some regulation that says it has to be a number.
Yeah.
You just can't say, okay, the rest of this round and however long the next one, it has to be a number. And that
and
was
after
the
a certain number of games, and this did cross the threshold, but it just crossed the threshold. You can, as a player, you can appeal.
Right.
And
he did not, by
the
way.
He did not appeal. And that appeal goes directly to Gary Bettman.
Right.
And it's possible that Bettman would have thrown the book at him.
Yeah.
I think, you know, honestly, I think that something has to be done about Matt Cook. I think that 18 months without a big suspendable thing is great. And that's, you know, I think that there has been some change in his game. But when you go back to this kind of behavior, and who was it? Sports Illustrated, I think, did a whole post of things that Matt Cook has done to either get suspended or injured other players. And the list is huge.
It's long.
But what, you know, which Matt Cook does the Minnesota Wild management and coaching staff want? Do they want the one that's going to be out there trying to play hockey, or do they want the one that's going to make the greater impact by hurting somebody?
Yeah.
And that's they knew who they were hiring.
Absolutely. Everybody would. And
you don't hire Steve Ott because of his playmaking ability.
Yeah.
He can make plays. I've seen him stop being a jerk and actually play hockey, but it's rare. You don't hire him because of that, though. There's other guys that can do that.
Either way, Matt Cook is just Matt Cook, and he's going to do what he does, and he's going to live on that edge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes him, you know, someone that everybody doesn't like to play against and someone that his team probably likes for a lot of reasons. So,
yeah.
If he was in an Avalanche sweater, this would be a very different conversation, obviously.
I don't know.
That's not going to happen.
Here's the thing. The Minnesota Wild fans were not cheering.
They didn't have his back. That's
they
for
were
sure.
Quiet.
That's different.
And frankly, you know, you and I have been, we've kind of been down this road before. Not this specific road.
Yeah.
Not you know, some guy, a guy taking out a knee. But in that, when you say we'd be having a different conversation, we wouldn't be having a different conversation because I've got two words for you, Brad May.
Well, Todd Bertuzzi. Did you hear any Red Wings fans say, "Oh, that was, you know,
no,
there was no intent there."
But Brad May came over as to an Avalanche. I didn't like him.
No, I hear you.
because of the Bertuzzi incident.
I hear you. So. It's complicated. The Avalanche, anyway, in this game, were 0-for-4 on the power play. They really struggled pretty much most of the series, except for when Matt Duchene returned. So maybe it was a combination of missing both Barry and Duchene on the power play that made the biggest difference, actually, with the team, not only on the power play, but that is what it was, 2-1 Avalanche at this point.
Yeah.
Tuesday, April 22nd, Ryan O'Reilly nominated for the Lady Byng Trophy for the league's most gentlemanly and sportsmanlike player. Mm-hmm. So good for him. O'Reilly had his career-high 64 points this year, and became the second player in NHL history with two or fewer penalty minutes when he played in over 80 or more games. So shout out to PR_NHL on Twitter for that. And also, let's see, career high. This is from the Avalanche. Career high, 64 points. Led the Avalanche in goals with 28. He was actually a top 20 goal scorer in the league this year, kind of very quietly. Power play goals, he had 9, and game winners, 6. He was tied for 6 for the team lead with game winners for the season. He led the NHL in takeaways this season, and it was the second time in the past 3 seasons that he led the league in that stat.
He's nominated with Marty St. Louis and Patrick Marleau, and I think that's unfortunate that he doesn't have a very French-Canadian last name, so I think he should be officially Ryan O'Reilly.
Okay, we'll go with that. How do you spell that? Do you want to work that out?
Yes, I'll do the math.
I'll come back to you on that one then. Okay. Wednesday, April 23rd to no... That's...
Okay, there's like 3 P's in a silent Q.
Yes.
And I think an ampersand.
For some reason in there.
I don't know how that happened.
There's an asterisk in there. I don't know what happened. Wednesday, April 23rd, Nathan MacKinnon is named a finalist for the Calder Trophy. It doesn't matter who else was nominated at all. They were both Lightning, but Nathan MacKinnon, here's your trophy already. Maybe they just should have handed it to him right there. Like, hey, you've been nominated. Hey, you won. Congratulations.
But he's
your winner.
Other guys from the Tampa Bay Lightning.
From the Lightning. MacKinnon topped all rookies in points with 63, goals with 24. He was tied for that stat. He led the league in rookie assists, power play goals, game winners, and shots.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. MacKinnon was the first player to lead all NHL rookies in goals, assists, and points since Evgeny Malkin did it in 06-07. Mm-hmm. So congratulations to him. And then we're back to Avalanche hockey. Thursday, April 24th, game four at Minnesota. The Avalanche lose this one 2-1. Jared Spurgeon, he scores in the first period. Charlie Coyle in the second period on the power play. Ryan O'Reilly scores 30 seconds after Coyle's goal to get the Avalanche back within one. 12 shots for the Avalanche this game. 30 saves. Yeah, that noise that you just made.
If there's a game where you need a response, this is the game. Yeah. This is not the game where you get 12 shots.
It was 12 shots.
There was like a 22-minute span where they only had one shot on goal.
It was pretty painful. They were still in it, which the only reason they were in it is because of the score. I mean, I think if they were down 3 or 4-0 at that point, everybody would have been freaking out. But it's like, okay, one bounce, and they're right back in this. And they were, but they weren't.
No, I was freaking out at this point. I was freaking out. It was, and here's the thing. It was either 8 or 9 shots before they pulled Varley. So that's no good.
That was tough. I guess the 0-1 Cup team on game 4, I believe, in New Jersey. Same type thing, though. I think this actually tied or set the lowest amount of shots in a Stanley Cup game.
Mm-hmm.
The 0-1 Cup team in the finals itself had, I think, 12 shots on goal in game 4 in New Jersey. I don't know. I don't remember it being this bad, though, as far as things went. Ryan O'Reilly had 3 shots, and no one else on the roster had more than one. And Darcy Kuemper comes up with a great effort and makes 11 saves for the win. This looked like the end of the series to many people. I think a lot of people started freaking out, although it was just 2-2, and it was good to see the Avalanche bounce back in game 5 and take advantage of that McKinnon-Suter matchup, or lack of the matchup, which seemed to kind of define the series except for game 7. What else we have here? April 25th, Varley was chosen as one of the 3 finalists for the Vezina Trophy. For the league's most outstanding goaltender, Ben Bishop from the Lightning and Tuukka Rask from the Bruins are the other two.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be up there. I think this is a 2-horse race. Bishop had a heck of a year. You know what? I'm having a tough time. I'm watching.
Bishop was the MVP of that team, of Tampa.
Oh, yeah. He did a great job. I just don't know. Yeah, who knows? You know, all this stuff is totally up in the air.
It's a good thing his injury came after the voting.
Said dislocated elbow. Ouch.
Yeah. And he'd already had a wrist injury, too, and he had to have surgery on that.
I wonder what's wrong with Kuemper, because he hasn't played since he left Game 7 here.
Ew.
It looked like a shoulder or an arm or something like that. I don't know.
There was some play where
upper body
kind of went behind, where the play kind of went behind him. It looked like he reached back
shoulder
the post,
maybe. Who knows? Let's see. Varley set the franchise mark in wins and save percentage. Led the NHL in wins as well, saves and shots faced, and finished 3rd in save percentage. Those are from Brendan McNicholas on Twitter, B. McNick. Mm-hmm. He's one of the Avs media relations guys. Varley with a heck of a season, and we have one Ask a HB question about that we'll talk about in a little bit. Yeah,
okay.
That's our newest one. All right, game 5, Avalanche against the Minnesota Wild, of course, again. You know, the thing is, too, as I think about this, too, Tyson Barrie going down, I think during the regular season, what I think about is the 7-game series are rough in the fact that one injury can really make a big difference moving forward. Whereas during the season, if Tyson Barrie goes down, they're playing against other teams and different styles and everything. But again, I think it's just a bigger deal that Tyson Barrie would have been able to stretch that team out a little bit more, just so they wouldn't have been able to hit like they would. And that's, hey, who knows? Everything kind of happens like it does, but. Cody McLeod, 8:04 in the second period with a shorthanded goal. Beautiful tip. Matt Molson a little bit after that on a deflection from the point. And your boy Nick Holden.
Nick Holden.
Was that Benoit on the shot? I believe it was. Nick Holden with a tip in right in front of the net a little later. Goes straight to the front of the net. And I think this kind of did the Avalanche in. We'll talk about Eric Johnson's 2-on-1 in game 7, or giving up with a 2-on-1.
I don't remember who it was, but like right after that goal, somebody was like, hey, there's your boy Nick Holden. I love it because people are like, oh man, we're going to convince James that Nick Holden isn't as bad as James really thinks he is, right? So this whole debate goes back and forth, and I'm like, yeah, this guy's still got to play defense, blah, blah. And I will say this about Nick Holden. He did get better as the season went on.
He did.
He was catching pucks much more cleanly. He didn't seem to need as much time. But probably like 2 minutes after that goal, Holden ices it. And I went, Holden icing. He's the worst player ever. And the other guy's like, darn it.
Damn it.
Short lived there.
It's so funny.
The Avalanche take a 2-1 lead in the third period. All they have to do is tie or win the period. You got a 3-2 lead in the series and everything's great. But within 6.5 minutes of the third period, goals from Parise and Brodziak bring the Wild to actual lead. I'm like, what the heck happened here? What'd you think of Gabriel Landeskog's unsportsmanlike conduct penalty when he sprayed Darcy Kuemper?
I would say that maybe he was warned about it previously.
That's
maybe somebody was warned about it previously, and we don't know because an official can also go over to the benches when they're in a TV timeout. Maybe something happened, and also maybe I'm going to say this about Landeskog. I thought he was spent a little bit too much time in the box, and I thought he got a little too individually aggressive on guys at times when he didn't really need to. Thanks for being the tough guy at times. Also, the Avs need that, but also really could use your skill on the ice.
Yeah.
So, settle down, big guy.
I think he'd agree with that too.
Yeah. Anyways, maybe something happened that led to that. I think that
it was a weird call.
It would be a very weird call. But one of the things that people were pissed off about was the timing of the call. And yet, what do we always hear? That a penalty at the beginning of the game and a penalty at the beginning of the season needs to be a penalty at the end of the game and during the playoffs. So if this was something that would have been called in the regular season, fine. But and don't get pissed off that it happened at this certain time. If you want absolute fairness in the game, if it would have been called at the beginning of the game.
Yeah, it was weird. That was
just one that's hard to. Yeah, so it's one that's. I think it's harder to judge objectively on that one than it really seems. It seems like, well, this is a stupid thing, but maybe there was something else.
Yeah. There had to be. I think that's the only explanation.
So, anyways, yeah.
Also, was Paul Stastny offside when Pierre Parenteau started the rush?
Yes, he absolutely was. Yeah. And I will say this. This became a bit of a debate because of the reading of the rule, but so I'm talking with people about this on Twitter, and then I looked at Carey Fraser's former NHL ref, and sure enough, the skate needed to be in contact
on the ice. Yeah, I thought I had maybe misinterpreted the rule, or maybe they changed it because there's an obvious picture of the puck, almost crossing the line.
Almost crossing the line.
That's the thing. The skate is onside, but the blade needs to be on the ice.
The screen grab of that was not yet offside because the puck wasn't over the line.
Right.
This screen grab that everybody was...
It was still in the middle of the blue line or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But if you have one skate in there in the zone, in the offensive zone...
And it can be.
And a skate off the ice, not in contact with the blue line, you're offside.
It can be on the red line. And if you got really long legs,
if you're in the other zone,
right.
Whoop-de-doo. But you have to have that contact with the line if on your skate, if you're on your trailing skate, if your leading one is in the zone. The way that it reads in the rule book is slightly ambiguous, but it's all about it. There's a little bit of wording in there that gets people confused, but
contact.
I swear to you, people, this is true. You have to make that skate contact. If you were in a delayed offside situation in the zone and you skated back to the zone and rather than touch the line with your skate, you just waved your skate over,
I'm picturing that in my head. It's kind of a cool picture.
It's like a dry martini where you just wave the bottle of vermouth over the martini. And that's as dry as you
can get. It's not a martini yet though.
Right. Well, yeah. You got near, but
close enough.
If your skate is above the line and you didn't actually contact it, you're still offside. You have to have that skate contact if your other skate is in the zone.
The blue line's kind of cool, and the lines themselves are kind of cool. And the fact that the blue line actually is the neutral, it's the neutral zone. It all depends on where the puck is.
It's the zone that the puck was just in.
If the puck's inside the zone, the blue line is actually inside the zone. If the puck's outside the zone, the blue line actually counts as outside. So now, if you have your skate on the line, you're still onside.
Yes.
But the whole skate needs to be on the line, not just some of the blade.
The blade of the skate. Right.
The entire blade?
No.
Okay.
Yes.
Any part of the blade?
Contact.
Contact.
But if you look at the screen grab also of where that near linesman was, he was on the wrong side of the,
was he trying to protect himself? I think there was something going on near him where he was trying to get out of the way.
It might have been, but he was on the wrong side. You need to be on the side that the puck is going towards.
Right.
So that's where you want to be.
And I wonder if there's people flying at him or something, because he was not in very good position.
Well, he was screened.
Right.
That's for sure. But
I wonder if Paul Stastny knew that.
The other problem is that might not have been his line.
Right.
The other, in that kind of situation, especially when you have a goaltender pulled, if you're in a situation with that kind of scenario, you have the other linesman's going to cover for you if need be, and they communicate a lot more than you expect.
Right.
Was he offside?
Yes.
Absolutely 100%. And yes.
Was P.A. Parenteau onside when he scored the empty netter? Yes, he was. They all even themselves out. We know that. Anywho, P.A. Parenteau ties the game up with a minute 14. Nathan MacKinnon.
I think that was right after I'd said that P.A. Parenteau had really lost a step and had slowed down in this thing.
I think.
So apparently he was just saving himself.
It was Ray Ferraro who said, good for him, because he hasn't done anything. I've got a lot of the calls actually linked up in the post for the show. Mm. But he said, good for him, because he has really been a no-show. And I agree with that. Yep. You know, he had had a hard time so far.
He was
becoming
a liability.
Yeah. Good for him, though. He ties it up. MacKinnon wins it in overtime about 3.5 minutes in. I've got all kinds of links to the calls. Mosier's call was fabulous. John Forslund's call was great for NBC Sports Network.
P.A. Mother trucking
Parenteau.
Yep.
Just good stuff. Good stuff. There's also a TSN call on YouTube. So just go do yourself a favor and YouTube that goal and just enjoy. Mm-hmm. Nathan MacKinnon becomes the youngest player in Stanley Cup history to score an overtime goal since Don Gallinger. Good old Don. Remember Don?
I remember Don.
March 21st, 1943 against the Canadians.
I was at that game.
It's as clear as day in
my head. I still had hair back then.
Didn't hair we all? My head. Key matchup for this series is Ryan Suter against Nathan MacKinnon. 7 of Nathan MacKinnon's 10 points in the series, including both goals, have come with Suter on the bench. That's from Mike Kelly NHL on Twitter.
There is the home ice advantage right there for you for last change. Patrick Waugh probably keeping him away.
Until game 7 for the most part.
Well, yeah.
And still, he still didn't do too much.
But. Seven points those first two games. Yep. And there was their home games with Avs having last change.
So it shows you how good Ryan Suter is. Let's just say that.
And shows you that there's actual coaching going on with Patrick Waugh, not just...
Go. You know, yeah, absolutely.
Not just whistling and pushing glass around.
Mm-hmm.
Shoving glass around.
Shoving partitions. Anyways. The Avalanche with 35 shots, so a nice bounce back game since their 12-shot performance game before.
That's what you need, yep.
29 saves for Varley. Holden, a goal, 3 shots, 5 hits. Parenteau, 6 shots and a goal. MacKinnon, a goal and 2 assists. Gabriel Landeskog, an assist and 5 shots. So
a 3-point night at home.
Yeah, and you would think this would get you in a pretty good spot. I know the stats are probably, about 75% of the teams, if I remember the stat right, maybe I don't, that win game 5 and take a 3-2 lead, win the series.
Well, let's see what Corsi has to say about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good old Corsi. Corsi says, I told you so. Monday, April 28th, game 6 against the Wild in Minnesota. The Avalanche lose this one 5-2. A couple empty net goals made it seem a little bit different. Matt Duchene returns the lineup.
Yay!
Things were better. He wasn't 100%.
No.
But definitely better than before. Mm-hmm. Avs down 2 less than halfway through the first period. The crowd's going absolutely bonkers. Paul Stastny scores on a breakaway shorthanded at 16:59 in the first period. It's 2-1 going in the second. And there we go. Nick Holden, a power play goal at 4:47, I believe, in the second period from O'Reilly and Duchene. Game is tied at 2. Third period felt a lot like overtime. A traditional overtime. Zach Parise with a tip at 13:31 breaks the tie, and then 2 empty netters, as I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. Zach Parise was a beast in this game. 2 goals, 2 assists. And
finally getting the performance they paid for.
Yeah, I don't even know if he could live up to that number, but he's definitely shown his worth, and good for him. Ryan O'Reilly, 2 assists, 4 shots. Varley only had to make 18 saves in this game. So the Game 6 loss was way better than Game 4, obviously. Mm-hmm. They played simply, they played well enough, but just didn't get it done. I don't know. This got me thinking too, during the playoffs, if fans wanted a call every time, something happened, what would the box score look like?
We'd still be talking about it.
They might still be playing 3-on-3 and everybody just pass out on the ice. But,
yeah. It's the playoffs, and you've got passionate fans, you got fans of all kinds. and the microphones don't pick up the ones that are quiet.
No, you they know? Don't.
There was a guy, I think it was in, there was a guy on the glass in the Chicago versus Minnesota game the other day that just like all the time was up in arms and jumping up and down. He was in a number 29 Pominville jersey. And, he was the only one, but he's he's just going nuts the entire time. Yeah. Hey, takes all kinds of fans.
The playoffs are interesting.
Have a good time. Tell you how to be a fan.
Speaking of all kinds of fans, there were some fans trolling Varley during this game. They had a picture. They had a picture of his mugshot that they held against the glass right behind him. They also had a picture of him in the courtroom, dealing with his legal issues that were eventually, taken care of earlier this season.
Mm-hmm.
Your tweets were they won Twitter that
well,
day.
Well, then people, somebody, I think it was Ryan Boulding and Greg Wyszynski were talking about that there were some fans. This, you know, I want the problem with the some fans thing is, you know, show me the percentage.
Yeah,
but somebody apparently said that they were going to hold up pictures of car crashes to troll Danny Heatley, which, you know, that's just, you know, if you don't know. Danny Heatley got in a car crash with his teammate Dan Snyder. Snyder died from that, and that was when he was with the Thrashers.
Thrashers, yeah.
You know, and obviously Jay and I do not hold that.
No, not even close.
My feeling was, you know, first off, if you want to troll the Wild, troll an effective player. but if you want to troll
one for you, that's one.
You know, get kind of. Get a little more creative, you know, bring a knee brace for Mike Yeo, you know, and for Danny Heatley, you want to troll Danny Heatley, bring a no trade contract clause, you know, bring a Senator's jersey.
Yeah. You said pictures of the
pictures
press
of
box.
The press box.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, and maybe even a picture of a press box next to a picture of a home and put an equal sign between them because that's where he spent most of the season. Do you want to troll somebody? Get creative.
Yeah.
Don't get crappy, you know, and there's no way that I can hold to the whole, Avs fans aren't like that, because everybody has those fans, everybody, and that's fine. You know, there's a guy who's a Rangers fan that I really like. I like him a lot, quite a bit as a person. I saw a tweet where he said that he wanted to see one of the player, you know, somebody injure another player. I can't hold to that.
Never.
As a person though, I like the guy.
Sure.
You know, so it's like, but
sure.
I don't, you know, just
it's kind of get
more creative. Don't bring up somebody's past like that. It's like, wasn't there like somebody who was trolling? I've seen trolls for guys who were getting like divorced and get like, you know, people would reference that. And so I was like, oh, come on.
Keep it classy though. You know, do it creatively. Think about it. But there's also, did you see
be funny about it? You know,
did
I
you
mean
see
like
the Jimmy Fallon thing with Robinson Cano, the former second baseman for the Yankees.
Oh, no, what?
Basically, what he had is he had a huge cutout, kind of like the
Avs
blanket here. And he went to New York. This was him coming back with the Seattle Mariners, and people would boo his cutout. And then they turned back to the guy that was interviewing him. He said, okay, boo him one more time. When he turns around, the actual guy is right there.
Yeah.
Hey, why don't you come on the other side of the glass and hold that picture to Varley's face and see what happens?
Yeah.
You know, it's just too easy against the glass to say whatever you want and act like nobody's paying attention it's just a picture, you know? If you're not going to do it to the guy's face, don't even do it.
I really thought that you were going to bring up the Jimmy Fallon thing where he was looking at the headshots of the players. Did you see this?
Oh, where he talks about like
what their high school awards were.
Yeah.
And Brad Marchand was most likely to deliver a pizza in an 80s movie. And then one guy was pretty cross-eyed and he said worst at darts. it's like, you know, there's so many things you could do. I would hold up a sign that like with Danny Heatley giving his big old gap tooth smile next to an old David Letterman with his gap tooth smile. You know,
there you go.
If you want to troll guys, really troll them.
It's just,
you know, don't
every single fan that was booing the picture of Robinson Cano, when they turned around, they shook his hand, said, hey, welcome back to New York. You know, so it's just, I guess it's not.
It's hockey hate.
It's
hockey hate, but I still think it's reflective somewhat of your character.
Yeah.
You know,
I think it's kind of scary that someone would think of printing those out and hold them against the glass. Maybe it's not scary. How does that make sense in someone's head? It's like, we're really going to throw him off his game by holding up these little signs. Varley could give a crap what you think, first of all. And second of all, do whatever you want. He's still going to save the puck. They don't even notice that stuff. Hmm. He might have.
Yeah. I don't know. That's, you know, it's that whole thing of it's, you've seen it in baseball, you know, guys are yelling at the outfielders all the time.
All the time.
And it's just like, you know, shut up, enjoy the game.
One of the greatest things I saw was Tony Gwynn who growing up played for the Padres. His son plays in the majors now. And there was a guy, somebody was videoing this. There was a guy behind him in left field at Coors. I think it was at Coors Field or something. And he was yelling at him. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, and he's hey, Tony, you suck. So that's Tony Gwynn between he's plays, left-handed. Yeah. Between plays, took his glove. And when the guy would talk, he would mirror it with his glove. And people started laughing. Even that guy started laughing. And then all of a sudden, everybody's friends.
Yeah.
So it's all, I guess it's all relative, but it's just, I don't know. Show some class while you're doing it. Yeah, that was not classy.
I've yelled things at the ice, you know, yeah. And but, you know, from the stands. And, you know, you try and be a little funny or something, yeah. You know. I mean, somebody gets called for hooking. I'm like, you're a hooker.
Hooker. Or boardy for boardy. Yeah. That's my favorite Anyways. Call right there. And then there was game 7, April 28th, and then it was over all of a sudden. The Avalanche led this game 4 times. Varley will obviously tell you that he should have been better. The Avalanche were the first team in the past 18 game 7s in the playoffs in the NHL to score first and then lose in that game. And the Sharks did it later that night as well. So it's tough to be an Avalanche fan right now, but think about what it is to be a Sharks fan right now. Where they, I think it's 4th time in history where they're up 3-0. They had
And there was one recently with the Bruins. Remember the Bruins did that?
That was the most recent. Then there was 2 others before.
Yeah,
where you're up 3-0 and you blow the whole thing.
3-0.
A game 7's anything can happen. I think going into overtime, I didn't get the feeling like this game was going to last very long either way.
Yeah.
I think I'm sure when the Avalanche went back to the locker room, Patrick Waugh said, "You just keep playing your game," and that's kind of what led to the 2-on-1 that ended the series. Eric Johnson got caught up ice trying to keep the puck in the zone. And Matt Duchene.
Yeah, let's talk about that real fast because we got this question from Phil Parker.
Hi, Phil.
Hi, Phil. Gentlemen, I don't know who he's talking to there.
Yeah,
a great season in the books. Wild ride that exceeded expectations. Should the Avs look for another grinder in net presence in Talbot or McKinnon, or you know, other than or like Talbot or McGinn, defensemen on the free agent market or Slim Pickens? The Avs make a trade or rely on those they already have. We'll get to that in a bit because I think that's been another question. And James, what do you mean by going low on the 2-on-1? Because it's something I tweeted about. When Eric Johnson pinched in down low, and it was really bad timing. And one of the reasons it was bad timing was because the center on the ice at the time was Matt Duchene. Matt Duchene, normally very speedy, normally very good, still coming off that knee injury. And if you're going to be if you're the center, chances are you're the guy covering D most likely. So you're going to be covering for Eric Johnson coming down low with the puck. Eric Johnson obviously saw an opportunity, but when it's this kind of game, when Varley needed to be better, you know, a couple of those goals I think were stick side. And he saw a few of those all the way.
Oh, absolutely. Spurgeon's game tying goal with about 2.5 minutes left. Yeah.
Ugly. So you've got a guy on the ice in Matt Duchene where he's not going to get back as fast as he normally would. He's not going to be skating backwards.
He's not
going to be skating backwards fast, at least.
You watch the game winner again, he was also kind of surprised. I don't know whether he had a good feel for kind of what was going on, but you can see him start to cover and start to back up. Because he's with whoever the other defender was at that point.
Yeah, it might have been Hayda.
Whatever it was.
It was Hayda or Benoit because they were mixing things up a little bit back there. It was kind of weird. There were many times when I see Johnson out there and wonder why Hayda wasn't out with him. So.
Well, we found out later that Hayda was playing with 2 broken fingers and pins in his thumb, which is pretty interesting. But
it was pretty, pretty ugly.
Yeah. You can see Duchene. He starts to back up and then he takes a peek behind him and goes, crap, there's nobody there.
Right.
And he actually turns around and goes, and it was too late by that point.
Yeah.
So it was just, I wouldn't call it a bad decision. I think it was.
I think it was a bad decision.
Well, I think it was the Avalanche playing their game, and he was trying to make something happen, and that led to a bad decision, since it's winning.
If you're going to play that game, make sure that you're playing it when you're down by 1 goal in the third period. Don't play that game when it's overtime.
Yeah.
And be aware of, and you know, I mean, I got barked at for not being aware of who was on the ice with me in a rec league game, to which I pretty much told the guy, what are you talking about?
Who cares?
Shut your cake hole. But if you're an NHL player on the other hand, and you've been
in overtime,
overtime, you've been playing with these guys for this long, that guy's injured. You're an NHL player. You have a lot more awareness on the ice. You should be aware of who's out with you. I think it was a bad decision to do it at that time.
Well, especially
with those players on the ice.
Especially since it went in. I know that's not all going through his head as he goes to try to keep the puck in the zone.
Right.
It was, especially since the puck went in, this becomes kind of a thing. All, you know, the Avalanche win this game. We again, it's probably like the what we talked about in the last show with the Blue Jacket bouncing puck. It ended up in the back of the net, and this was obviously the most important goal of the season. I think he was just trying to play his game, and it didn't work out very well. And we're not blaming Eric Johnson for the puck going in. Go ahead if you need to.
What I am doing though is just saying that you know, I think a better decision could have been made by Johnson at the time. It is his game. It is the game that he needs to play. I just think that it was a game that maybe wasn't the right one to play at the moment.
I didn't get the feeling, like I said, and it was right. And I'm not even happy either way, but I didn't think the overtime was going to last very long just because
of how they should have had that one.
Yeah.
He saw it all the way. It was glove side. He shouldn't have let that one in.
Well, he shouldn't have let a couple more in that would have led to the overtime too.
True, but
that's just how
he kind of Ryan Millered out at the end there.
That's how game sevens. It's an actual thing now. Ryan Millered, it's a verb. it's just one of those things, and game sevens can go either way.
Anyways, moving on.
It was also, we're cool. It was also disclosed that Gabriel Landeskog played with a hand injury, and the rumor was that came from a slash from Matt Cook earlier in the series. He wasn't himself after basically game two, game three, so there's that as well. As we said, Jan Hayda was dropping a stick all over the place. I'm not sure if he had a broken finger and a broken thumb on the same hand, if they were on separate fingers, whatever. He was a mess. Mm-hmm. And overall, here's your thing. In the first round, seven teams scored a tying goal in the last 2.5 minutes of regulation, and all seven won that game and won their games in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of it doesn't necessarily crush your soul, but it's like, well, we've got 2.5 minutes until we have either close out the series or have another win in this playoffs, and the team comes back, and that team ends up having the momentum. So
see this in the playoffs a lot more because there's so much more to skate for at the moment.
Yeah.
Game 50, you're not going to see that.
Right.
Game 70, you're not going to see that unless you're like absolutely, unless you're fighting for a playoff spot and every 2 points counts. You just don't see it in the regular season. And even then, it's hard to, it's hard to go in with that mentality. You go into these games the mentality of we have to win if we are to continue. So from the get-go, that kind of thing is not surprising per se. It's just, it's how you have to play.
It was overall is disappointing, but the end of an awesome season, of an unexpectedly awesome season.
Yeah.
I kind of forgot, and I guess I wasn't expecting what it was like to watch my team lose in the playoffs. And game seven overtime winner hurt even worse. I don't know. It was just one of those.
I don't know why I did. Corsi predicted that it was going to be a game seven overtime winner.
I told you so.
Jesus.
It was just one of those things. I guess none of us wanted to see this to end. But,
no. I was sad about it, but you flip it as best you can, I think, and say, well, the reason I'm sad about it is because there was so much promise and there was so much fun in the regular season.
Yeah.
Last season didn't have this.
No,
the season before that didn't have this.
And we were
the last time they were in the playoffs, it didn't feel like there was any hope. There's, you've got the dueling Sackos. It was boring.
Yeah,
and now we had a chance for something that was a lot more fun. And I think that's the takeaway. Is that, things can get better. No one's going to be surprised by the Avalanche next season.
No.
And that's fine because it would have taken, I would take this any day over another Oilers type season.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. And that's kind of what I keep going back to. So May 6th, Patrick Waugh named a finalist for the Jack Adams Award that goes to the league's top coach. Mm-hmm. It's he, Babcock, and
John Cooper of the Lightning.
So. I think this is Patrick Waugh's to win as well.
Yep.
This is PR_NHL on Twitter. Waugh's Avs that were 52-22-8 became the first club since the league expanded in 1979. Like I said earlier in the show, to go from bottom three to top three. The award show is June 24th in Las Vegas. And, my point here is, Shane O'Brien might be there. It's the off season. It's Vegas.
It was Shane O'Brien. It's been the off season for a long time for him. He got sent down. Abbotsford, and Abbotsford is losing their team. All because of Shane O'Brien. All because the city has been subsidizing that team.
Wow.
And they are spending $5.5 million to buy out the rest of their contract because they're projecting that the rest of the contract with the team is going to cost them, what did they say, $11 million.
Wow.
Yeah, and this is not not a city that can afford that. It is not the best off city. In fact, I think within the past 10 years, for at least 1 year, it was the crime capital of Canada.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And that's saying something.
And that's in BC with the AHL, where the nearest team is Iowa. Since Manitoba had packed up and left.
Wow.
Because of the Winnipeg Jets coming back.
Interesting.
Yeah. Bad, bad choices all around.
Yes.
So anyways, Shane O'Brien, Abbotsford Heat. Make sure that you get that jersey off of Me Gray when you find it.
It's all you.
Yep. Maybe you can play for the Las Vegas Wranglers if they're back next season.
Plenty to choose from.
Yeah.
And people can kick trash cans on the way while you're walking to the game. All right. So Avalanche moving forward, we're going to go down this list really quick. Mike Chambers from the Denver Post, shout out to him. Thank you very much for this. All right, forwards, Patrick Bortolo. He'll make $1 million the next two seasons. He'll be back.
That's fine.
You love Borty.
He's fine.
He actually had a pretty decent year.
He did okay. Mm-hmm. I thought he was okay. I thought he started making a few better plays, a few better choices.
Smart. Smarter.
But, you know, he is what he is.
He wears a size 58-plus jersey, so I'm down with him.
Sure,
right on, Bordy. Paul Carey played in only 12 games. He'll be a rookie again next year if he makes the team. Who knows? We can't even call that one. Marc-Andre Cleish is under contract for the next 2 years, $700,000 apiece for both of those years. I think he had a great year. Kills penalties, solid fourth-line guy. Good for him. A guy that basically the Avs picked up for nothing. They picked him up off waivers from the Kings. Matt Duchene, whose 5-year, $30 million contract kicks in next year, he'll be buying a new house. Joey Hischin made his playoff debut. He recorded his first point in game 4, I believe, after Barry got hurt. They brought in Hischin. Good for him.
Finally.
It's been a long road for him with his concussions.
I was at the Memorial Cup that he got injured at. I did not go to the game that he was injured at, but I was really looking forward to seeing him play when he was with the Owen Sound Attack and they were in that Memorial Cup, and I was very bummed that he wasn't there. But he had a long road.
Yeah.
I feel so bad for that guy because, yeah, that's the thing with concussions. You never know. And you can get one. Like, look at Patrice Bergeron. He had that concussion, and I think he got like 2 or 3 or something like that. They kept him out for a while, and he's been fine ever since. You never know when it's going to be.
Hopefully Hischin's because you never know. So good for him. Congratulations, Joey Hischin. Gabe Landeskog is obviously the captain, had career highs in goals and points, and is under contract through 2021. I love reading that. Way to go, captain. Nathan MacKinnon, he'll be back, obviously. I think he's got 2 more years on his entry level, and then he'll get paid so much money. He'll get the monies. Brad Malone, unrestricted free agent. He played pretty well the last part of the season. Who knows whether he'll be back? Do you care either way?
I say you throw him a two-year two-way. Okay. And make sure that it's significant enough that...
Do you want me to write these down so you can say I told you so when they all happen?
No.
Okay.
No, I'll remember. I say throw him a 2 year two way and see if he bites. If he doesn't bite on that, let him move on. It's okay.
He looked good, and he filled in nicely as the Avalanche got more and more injured.
Yeah,
give him credit. So Jamie McKinn, restricted free agent.
Sure.
I'm like either way.
I'm a little ambivalent about him. He could go either way.
I think he's an asset.
I think Malone might be a good play. Might be a good replacement for him. But I don't see why you don't throw a year or two at him. See what happens.
Especially restricted. I'm interested. I wonder what kind of numbers other teams would throw at him that the Avalanche would have to match. Yeah. But we'll see.
But also, we're starting to get into the territory where you could pick up a free agent in that area, and it wouldn't really hurt you.
That's true.
You know, that you might get a one-for-one on that kind of thing.
I think as much as everybody would like this team to stay together, there's going to be some movement. It's going to be interesting to see kind of how this all plays out.
Mm-hmm.
Cody McLeod is signed through next season. Love that guy. John Mitchell, 3-year extension during this season. He'll obviously be back, although we didn't see him again after he suffered his concussion late in the year.
Not his fault.
That hurt a little bit, though.
Yeah.
All right, here's a big name, Ryan O'Reilly. What happens with him? What do you think? He's restricted, so basically what that means for those of you that don't study all this, if you're too busy studying the Corsi stats, basically another team can come in and offer him whatever, and the Avalanche would either have to match it or they will get basically compensation from that team in regards to, I'm not sure whether it's how well he does, or they get some picks or something like that. So the Avalanche have the upper hand with Ryan O'Reilly that they don't have with Paul Stastny.
Yeah, we've been down that path before.
Yeah, it didn't work out so well.
That's what happened with the last time. Calgary made the offer sheet, and then the Avs matched it and were forced into it. I don't see him holding out this year.
No.
I see them throwing pretty much the same money he's making at right now.
Six or right around in there.
Yeah, just saying, look, you know, you're kind of topping out as it is.
Yeah.
You had a great year and all of that, but you're already getting paid. We're going to match your contract for another 2 years, and then we'll go from there.
I think two years?
Not, I think 2 years. And
you don't give him the long one, maybe like a Duchesne or Landeskog? Or
again, we're in that. Yeah, you know, we could bridge.
Who knows?
You know, because one of the problems, and this is something that Gary Bettman addressed, was that the Canadian dollar right now is not doing as well against the U.S. dollar as it was in the last couple of years.
Right.
So the projected salary cap is going to be $1 or $2 million less than what they were expecting. It's still going up, but rather than the $71 million that they were thinking, it's now going to be either 70 or 69. Doesn't seem like a ton, but it might be enough to entice somebody away to another team.
Yeah.
And that's where I think that you're going to kind of see that bridge. Keep in mind that this was supposed to be the year that of a big jump because of the Rogers. Cable and right. Rogers Sportsnet and all that, their Canadian television deal where they get exclusive rights for the next, I think it's 12 years for $5.5 billion.
That's it?
That's it.
Oh.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Chump change.
Easy.
But all that money is essentially hockey-related revenue. So half of that would go to the salary cap. And now it's not quite as much as they were thinking. And if you remember, right before the lockout, the Canadian dollar was not doing well at all against the U.S. dollar, and it was actually hurting teams to sign players. They didn't want to go to Canada because the dollar wasn't doing as well, and the taxes were higher, so their return was not as much.
It's complicated.
It's really complicated.
There's a lot going on.
So I'm thinking you get a 2 year on him, and if you can, maybe a 3 year. You want him.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
That's the thing with and the Stastny thing also.
We got them.
But you want these guys. The question is, can you have them? And welcome to the cap era.
I think the Avalanche are third lowest in the league, at least before the new Duchesne deal kicks in and the new Landeskog deal. I don't know whether that kicked in already, though, either. So the Avalanche do have some money to spend, which is obviously pretty good.
Yeah, right now the Avs would sit at the end of the season, they were at $52.6 million in the cap hit. So you're still talking another, what are we talking, 16 to 17 million?
They have the space. It just depends on if they want to spend the money too. It's a little bit of both. It's a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
P.A. Parenteau locked in for the next two seasons. Let's come back to Stastny. Max Talbot locked in for the next two seasons as well, and so is Alex Tanguay. So those guys aren't going anywhere. Let's do the defenseman, then we'll come back to Stastny. We're going to Tyson Barrie, restricted free agent. So I think he made himself some money this year too.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if other teams are going to be willing to give up what they need to get Tyson Barrie. He's restricted. So he's in that Ryan O'Reilly boat. So more money that needs to be spent. The Avalanche are going to make some changes on the blue line. I think that's pretty obvious. Andre Benoit, his contract is up. Don't know if he'll be back. Stephen Elliott may be ready to step up into that role, but the free agent defensive pool doesn't look so great either. So I don't know what happens with all this. I wish it wasn't like this. I wish there was maybe one or two kind of bigger defensemen that the Avalanche could spend some money on and get here.
Yeah, the top looking at Cap Geek right now, the top three UFAs for defense: Dan Boyle, Kimmo Timonen, and Andre Markov. All over 35. Then you got Yoni Pitkinen, who's 30. Marek Zidlicky, 37. Then Andre Mazaros with Boston, 28. He's going to get snatched up. Kyle Quincy will pass. And then you start going down from there.
Passed once. We'll pass again.
Brooks Orpik, 33. Pass. But, you know, he's still there.
Big pass.
You know, when he... You start looking down the list, and let's see, in the top, I'm going to go a dozen, two are under 30.
Yeah, there's just not.
You know, and that's obvious, you know, restricted, unrestricted free agent, you get to a certain age and you get that. But, hey, Matt Hunwick is a UFA. Corey Sarge is a UFA. Ray Hainsey, Matt Green, you know, there's not a lot out there. And when I would see these guys, and like, I think even Mike Chambers, but you know, get a free agent, you know, get a defenseman in free agency. I want to point this list at them and go, who?
Yeah. And who's for how much?
Yeah.
And
who's going much? To, I don't even care about the how much at this point. Yeah. Who yeah. do you want?
It's just one of those years. Maybe it's a tribute to when teams find a defenseman like a Suter or a Chara.
Yeah.
You lock them up long term.
And we also have another, what, month and a half until free agency hits. Yeah. Guys can be re-signed by their teams.
Who knows? So, we'll see.
Anyways.
Nate Gannon signed a 2-year extension this season. He'll be back for the next two. Jan Hayda still has one more year on his contract. Nick Holden is signed through next season for $600,000. I mean, that's what you get.
Yeah. Is it one way or two way? Probably he'll be it's back. Probably a two way.
Yeah, but I don't so think if he's doesn't
not
going really, anywhere.
He's not going anywhere.
No, he's
that's
not.
That's kind of too bad. By the way, Jan Hayda, I felt he really came into his own this year.
I think he did too.
I think this year he finally played like what they were expecting.
He and Eric Johnson. Yeah. Fabulous years for both of them. Mm-hmm. Eric Johnson, speaking of, under contract for the next 2 years. Corey Saric, pretty much gone.
Gone.
Ryan Wilson, he has one more year on his $2.25 million contract.
I think if there's trade bait, it's him.
For who, though?
I don't know, but I think that if you're going to dangle somebody, it's going to be him.
Who wants him at $2.25 million?
I don't know, but if there's somebody that you can that is completely expendable right now off of that list, other than Gannon and Holden. It's Ryan Wilson. He was in the doghouse so much.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody's going to look at him and go, you know what? He just needs a change of environment, and we need a guy.
Yeah.
You know, we need a number 3-4. He needs a change of environment. Maybe he'd be our guy. I don't know who's going to say that, but that's what I would be. That's who I'd be calling you. The guys that need a 3-4 that are a little bit desperate, that have a little bit of room, and have taken guys before that need a change of environment. Florida Panthers maybe would be a pretty good one for that. No, seriously.
No, like, I hear you.
Was it Campbell? Their defenseman, right. Campbell. Perfect example, you know?
Yeah.
So,
who knows? I think if there is one thing that the Avalanche need to improve on and have the most, I guess, flexibility right now, it is the defense. So maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Reto Berra locked in for the next 3 years at a little less than a $1.5 million a year. Jagr is expected to retire. And Varlamov, his new contract, I think, kicks in next year, almost six a season. The biggest question mark, I think, for the Avalanche, and as far as, like, I guess what you'd call it, leverage, is Paul Stastny.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest question mark as far as what are they going to do with him, especially with having no leverage right now, because they either chose to not move him or there weren't any offers at the trade deadline, and he hasn't signed a new contract yet. So...
Well, you know, that's been the question for 2 years, 3 years. I mean,
maybe even longer.
Yeah, it's not going to be an easy one to answer. And this is one that I'm kind of washing my hands of. You want him, but can you? I mean, if he's going to be, he said that he was willing to take a pay cut, you know, because it's obvious why. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you want him, but I don't know if they can have him. And if it's a matter of between, do you want O'Reilly or do you want Stastny, you want O'Reilly. That's my feeling right away.
Yeah. I just, Steven Graf, hey, Steven, probably the biggest thing he said is that hockey's not as basically big as a business for Paul Stastny as it is for other players. This is a family business for Paul Stastny. He has some allegiance to Denver, obviously, because he went to college here, and also some allegiance to the franchise itself for the for his dad and his uncles who played in Quebec. I really don't see him in my mind at all wearing another jersey. I think it'd be weird to see him, but it's all up to him right now, and whether the Avalanche can throw enough money at him to keep him around. I'd love to see him back in an Avalanche uniform as well. And he and Ryan O'Reilly, I'm not really excited about really anybody else that might be expendable, but hopefully he's back.
I could see him in Nashville. I could see him there.
The big one's St. Louis. That's his home. I guess that's where he was born, because that's where his family lived when his dad played.
I don't think St. Louis can afford him. I don't think St. Louis has I don't think they're gonna have the space, and they've got other question marks that they need to take care of, including goaltending.
Would have loved to have been a fly on the wall to hear some of the conversations during, you know, the trade deadline or whatever, or even when they had a chance to sign him, when they signed the Gannons, when they signed Varley, when they signed all the rest of the guys. Who knows?
Yeah.
We're gonna see. That's definitely the biggest question mark, and I think the thing that most everybody's worried about. Ryan O'Reilly's restricted, so that makes it a little, I guess, less complicated if you want to put it that way. But the Avalanche don't have any leverage with Paul Stastny. He can go wherever he wants to for whatever price, and I don't know whether he's interested in going towards the highest bidder or just maybe he and his agent made a deal and just said, you know, hey, let's just wait till the offseason. We'll figure something out. Who knows?
You glossed over Reto Berra, but I just want to say something real fast about him. So far, he's played two games. Didn't do well.
Looked bad.
It's two games. It's a small sample size. And people freaking out that he's going to be the backup.
That's why I glossed over it.
Yeah. Relax. No, I'm not. Just relax, people.
They saw something they liked with him. We trust Joe Sakic. We trust Patrick Waugh.
Yeah. And Francois Allaire.
Yeah.
Even if it's not a matter of trust, just give it time. You know, the Avs have been sitting on Calvin Pickard forever and a decade. They've got they have Sammy.
Say it. Do it. You can do it.
Adelaovich.
Yes, that's really close.
Ada Kallio.
Yes.
And
they obviously didn't think enough of them. They obviously thought, you know, enough of the two guys in Lake Erie to go trade for Berra and give him a 3-year deal before he even played a game for the Avalanche. That says a lot right there on a lot of different levels for sure. And we'll see. He'll be fine. Calm down.
Well, I mean, whether he's fine or not, just give it a chance.
Yeah.
You know, relax.
Two games does not. Yeah.
When that long ago, people are screaming, hey, trade Stastny.
Varley. Oh, no, Varley. Why do we give up so much? Yeah. You're seeing it now.
So anyway, it'll
be fine. All right. Ask AHP. Hashtag Ask AHP. Thank you.
So many.
Yes. Thank you, everyone. We've answered a fair amount of these already. Spongy Monkey. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Is Cupcake Strong really being retired for good, James?
Oh, my liver says yes. My belly says yes.
Oh, if he had a burp right now, he'd totally throw it at the microphone.
Oh, you. And he had another one that we.
What else did Chris say?
He wanted to know if there's an outdoor game coming this season, would we pay to attend?
Sure.
Even me.
Yes, please.
Yeah, you know, and I'm cheap. I paid for a ticket or two this season.
I'm curious what jerseys they'll wear and who they'll play. Because the teams always wear a different jersey, whether it's the same jersey with a cool, they call it chrome. They have a chrome emblem where it's not embroidered or anything like that. It's just a flat, I don't know. I've heard good and bad things about it.
I think they'll do something different next year. Maybe they do an Avs jersey with Nordiques colors.
Mm-hmm. Like,
that would be kind of fun.
That would be cool. I don't know. I'm curious.
My stand has been that I really haven't enjoyed paying for a game to go to a Pepsi Center game when after the lockouts but for an outdoor game, yeah, I'd do that
because it'd be cool.
The experience. I really enjoy, and I've been to so many minor league games in various places, is that I enjoy a different experience, and that's really what I want to see.
Yeah,
so yeah, fun. Totally. I absolutely.
And that's would, been the I rumor for a while. I don't know if I'd
pay top dollar,
right?
But yeah,
it's been the rumor for a while now, and we will see.
Yeah.
Barella 14 on Twitter. How many goals
Steve
were
Graf? Why didn't the cupcakes work?
Oh, sorry. I'm glossing over cupcakes.
Cupcakes strong. The cupcakes worked.
They did. They totally worked.
But I can't do everything. That's all.
You ate a lot of cupcakes.
I did. Also,
were they good?
Phil Park asked, what was my favorite kind of cupcake for Cupcake Strong? That would be the red velvet.
Mm-hmm.
The ones from Mermaid Bakery were really tasty, but I also liked the little mini ones from Target because they weren't as big and I didn't feel as, like I packed on the pounds.
That's heavy.
Yeah, that last game got a little heavy.
Barella 14, how many goals were scored because Hayda could not hold on to his stick because he was hurt? And did the Avs have a better option without Barry? I don't know.
Yeah, don't know.
No. Those are tough ones. Hayda at 100% would have helped, but Barry at all would have helped a lot too. Greg GSH702. Hey Greg, Jersey buddy of mine, who should be resigned and who should go? I think we already covered.
Yeah, that's kind of covered in the other stuff. It's going to be harder, I think, on the forwards actually than the defense, which, if you have promising defense, you want to hold on to them. I think it's a little more clear cut there. Forwards, I think it's all going to depend on what happens with Stastny and O'Reilly. If anybody gets cast to the wind, I'm going to guess that, you know, you're going to say goodbye to Mitchell. Paul Carey's an RFA, and he's just going to get a two-way.
Right.
Kleish could be a decent trade bait, I think. But yeah, why bother? I think he's a good, I think he's a better fourth liner than a lot of the guys.
Oh yeah.
I think that the vast majority of the forwards going to get held on to. It's just going to be the D. And yeah, we kind of talked about that.
Speaking of Colin, Pakalanch on Twitter, can and will the Avs open their pockets to sign both O'Reilly and Stastny to big deals with McKinnon's rookie deal ending 2 years from now? Who knows what their plan is? I'd love to see all three of those, but can you afford all three, especially with how much, can you imagine if McKinnon stays healthy, keeps getting bigger, stronger, faster, which would be mm-hmm. scary, how much money is he going to command?
I think he's going to, well, I mean, you know, lock him in on the RFAs as long as you can and, you know, get those bridge contracts and see where you're at. At that point, who knows? Maybe somebody falls off the radar. Maybe somebody ages out and maybe you find that you have maybe you change your philosophy at that point. I mean, look at where we were a couple of years ago when they got rid of John Michael Lyles, got rid of Shattenkirk, and decided that puck-moving defensemen just weren't really a priority.
Stewart as well,
yeah. Look at where we're at now, and there's Tyson Barrie getting injured, and there's your puck-moving defenseman that you wish you had back.
Yep.
So philosophies change, and we're going to have to see where they really sit within a couple of years.
Health is always a factor, yeah, too. You never know.
They're going to do what they can. They're going to bend over backwards to re-sign him. I think that, if anything, then you wind up dangling O'Reilly as a trade bait. Yeah. If you have to cut O'Reilly to get into McKinnon, I'd make that move.
Everything's up in the air. Rich P, Charlie Cheese on Twitter, the team has gelled so well this season. How do you think the inevitable changes will affect things? Heck, you never know about
for
this
the
stuff.
Better.
I mean, I don't see things getting worse. I think this team is still trying to get rid of a few things.
I need water. There it is.
Jeez, I thought something was wrong. James got his water. You never know. This is all part of it. And as much as I think we'd like to see this same team for the next 3 or 4 years, it's just not going to happen. But knowing that the Avalanche are well taken care of with Sakic, with Allaire, with Wah, mm-hmm. things are good. Things are way better.
I'm less concerned. You know, remember that, remember all the hand wringing when O'Reilly finally got signed, after he held out, and all the hand wringing and Matt Duchene is going to be butthurt about this and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then, oh, look, nobody cared. Yeah. It was fine. How do I think it's going to be? I think it's going to be fine mostly because if this was the Sacco era, I would have zero confidence it would be fine. We've gone through the culture shift, you know, and now it's also almost become a cliche, the culture thing, but the culture shift that had to happen finally happened. I think that's more important to the team than we had to get rid of this one guy that was a fan favorite.
All of a sudden, this is a place where people, I think, would want to come play too, which is a big game changer,
yeah,
as far as trades, as far as all kinds of, I mean, this
and
is
as far as money. I mean, people would take a salary cut to go play with Sidney Crosby. You know, that's part of why the Penguins have a rotating cast of characters down, you know, in their third and fourth lines, and nobody seems to mind, and yep, they still succeed.
Oh yeah.
People want to go play there, and now you're looking at that more here.
Jaden McCarg, Avalanche HQ on Twitter. What is your favorite moment in history of being an Avs fan?
Raymond Bork.
That was that one.
You know, it was pretty big. It was pretty
the Cups obviously stand out. That's easy.
Yeah.
I go back to, I think it was 99, 2000 playoffs.
Hmm.
Chris Drury against the Stars. Like, it was double overtime. He beat Ed Belfour. I think it was glove side or blocker side in overtime. Mm-hmm. Gary Thorne goes crazy. It's just one of those things where we had Stars fans near us that we were getting along fine with, and it was just a great hockey game at the old McNichols, and it was as loud as I've ever heard a place. I wasn't at Game 7 in 2001. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, favorite memory, that's definitely one of them. That kind of sticks out too. But, geez, yeah. Raymond Bork, that's after 22 years.
Raymond Bork.
We, you know, and I didn't get to see any live Abs games until like 2003 or something,
right,
like that, or it might have been even a little after that, because, you know, when they came to Denver, you know, hockey was a bit on my radar.
Yeah.
But then I was a poor theater guy who couldn't, you know, I was struggling to make rent at times.
Right.
And then I went away on tour when I was 25, and that was 98. And so I didn't get to see a live Avs game,
sure,
until my first live NHL game wasn't until 2003, and that was the Atlanta Thrashers versus the Buffalo Sabres. Oh. So I can't really even say that that was much of an NHL game.
Fun.
They were horrible. Both teams were horrible.
Well, my dad and I have been at we've been at this for 30 years, basically, in Denver, mm-hmm. all the way back to the minor league teams and everything like that. So one of my favorite memories, too, is 96 during the playoff run, and Joe Sakic is scoring all these goals. And when they'd announce his name here, so the Avalanche goal scored by number 19, Joe Sakic, the whole crowd would say it with the announcer. Yeah. That was kind of a cool thing, too, because he got plenty of practice. So
good point. For me, Raymond Bork, I think, is kind of the antithesis of it.
That was that's happy times.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jaden. Twin Sanity Dad, have you guys thought of doing a road trip to Cleveland to watch Lake Erie Monsters?
Why bother? Last season, it was like going to the Pepsi Center and watching Lake Erie Monsters.
Hey-o.
No, I have seen probably in the 60 to 70 different minor league venues around the country. I took a road trip through the entire UHL.
Awesome.
Look it up, kids. It don't exist no more. I've seen almost every venue of the Central Hockey League.
James travels.
Yeah.
Well, you've traveled in the
past. I did the entire East Coast, or sorry, West Coast road trip, where I did all the NHL, the ECHL, and the junior up along the
right
coast.
Across the street sometimes.
Pretty much, yeah. And I'd love to go to a Lake Erie Monsters game. I would totally do that. I almost did it last year, but just time. And I ran out of time and I ran out of gas. Personally, to do it. That was when I went to Cedar Rapids. I went to Milwaukee, and I can't remember where the other one
Cowbells,
was.
Right?
Yeah, Cowbells.
Cowbells. Cowbells. I mean, I thought about it. If I could travel, and I'd love to go on a road trip, just watch the Avs for a couple games every season, but I've got two little girls at home, and it makes it tough. But we'll keep it in mind if it ever comes up, for sure. Scott Thurston, Hockey Fool, why, God, why? Got an answer for that one?
Yeah, actually, I do.
Phil Park, when does training camp start? And is the NFL draft finally over?
The NFL draft is never over.
It's never over.
It's going to go into October.
So much hype with that. Training camp, I don't know. What is it? Late summer? It's late summer.
It's September.
Yes, right around in there.
Yeah, I think. They should have rookie camp right not too long after the
thing.
Playoffs final, you know, wind up, the cup, that thing. Gets handed
the thing
after Raymond Bork raises it, then they'll do it.
Yes, that's what he's gonna do. And last one, Dead Mao, I don't even know, whatever. How would the Avs overcome Varley
Dead Sabres? Man of M,
yes, of
Michigan. There you go,
Dead Man. Dead Man, I thought it was Dead. Oh, whatever. Thanks for the question. Either way, how would the Avs overcome Varley's save percentage regressing to his career average? Can they get better defensemen?
Yeah.
Less shots, so he doesn't have to work as hard. Although, it's not sustainable, but him with more shots was better this season.
A 9.27 isn't sustainable? I think it is.
I mean, with better defense won't hurt.
Yeah.
He faced the most shots and stopped the most shots in the league this year.
Mm-hmm.
That's good, but it's not so good. You don't want your goaltender taking on that much rubber.
Right.
To use a media term there for you.
How many more saves is that? That's one more save per 100 shots, right?
Yeah.
That's it. So, I don't see why it has to. Other than potential injury, there's nothing that says that he has to, but 9.17 is fine for a regular season.
Yeah, especially if he's not seeing as many shots, and he saw too many this year, and I think the team will tell you that.
I'm less concerned about Varley in the regular season than I am in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I don't want to become like a Sharks fan, start freaking out about the playoffs, but Varlamov has not gotten past, has not really come up big in playoff games yet. Over a long run. I remember the game against the Penguins when he was with the Capitals, where just the stick on the line save, absolutely acrobatic. They still lost that series. He's got to make it through an entire series.
Yeah.
That's more my concern.
Yeah. And hopefully the experience this year helps out. Mm-hmm. So, all right, we're wrapping up here.
Finally. Wow. That was a long one.
That's what she said. Do you want to do the shtick first, or I have some thank yous? The spiel?
I'm not ready for the shtick, so go ahead.
All right. Thank yous. I have lots of thank yous. First of all, for those of you on Twitter, all my new followers, all the people that played Avs Twitter Sidekick this season, I've got a blog post coming up kind of describing some of the numbers behind that. There were, I think, close to 350 winners by themselves. let alone all the tweets that everybody took the time to put in. So thank you for that. I got a couple of the blog posts as far as a couple card things I want to share with you. And also I'll do a blog post on the Ryan O'Reilly jersey that should be with me here pretty soon. The Facebook fan page towards the end of the season went over the 500 people who have liked it, Mark. Thank you very much for that. And James, I can't thank you enough for, like, I'm pointing at all this. Like, if we had a picture, some of you have seen a picture of what we have here. The reason
up and put up a few more up.
Yeah. The reason the show sounds like it does and it makes us sound smarter, I'm sure, because of how good it sounds, is because of James. And James, you make me a better hockey fan, and I appreciate that. Thanks. Thank you. That's it. We just had a moment. Aww. Should we do a bro hug in a little while? Yes. We'll yes. All right. Are you ready for the spiel?
Almost. Yeah, for me, you know, thanks for doing the show.
You know. It's way better with two people.
Oh, man. I had a lot of fun this season with people. Met a lot of new people. Met a lot of new friends, new ass fans. When the team was doing poorly or during the lockout, people kind of scattered to the winds.
Yes, they
and
did.
It's nice to see people back and all that.
It's nice
also,
to see people stick around, too. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Also, I had personally kind of a rough season. Most of you don't know this. My dad passed away in February. He went to the hospital in October. So when I was talking about like games, like I remember he was totally out of it in the ICU, and thank goodness for the University Medical Center in Tucson, because they had great Wi-Fi and I could watch games on my iPad. So when I was talking about things, like I remember the talking about how good the Dallas Stars were. That was because I could watch on my iPad on their Wi-Fi, and that kind of helped get me, you know, get through it. So I was down there, and then he passed away at the beginning of February, and I was down there and being able to watch games, you know, again on laptop, and, you know, it's like kind of some hockey therapy. You know, at the same time, you know, which also Jay and I trying to, you know, there were a couple times when people had asked for, hey, when's the next show? And we didn't say why I was not, you know, why we couldn't do one, but it was because I wasn't there.
I feel like this is kind of like the playoffs where people, you know,
you get the injury report afterwards. Is that what you're saying?
that's our injury, but there are things more important than,
well, yeah. What we and do. You know, that's it was when I was still on tour, we were playing Tempe. And my dad grew up in Chicago, and they were like dirt poor, and he would park people's cars outside of hockey games, outside of Blackhawks games. And occasionally he'd get to go in, you know, after like somebody give him tickets, or they'd sneak in the second period or something. And, I bought tickets to the, Phoenix Coyotes versus Chicago Blackhawks, because we never saw a game together. And unfortunately, he bailed that night because I didn't realize how like long the drive was until I was actually going to play hockey in Tempe a little bit while I was down there. So I brought my gear down because I knew I was going to be down there, and I knew I was going to have to get away from dealing with all the crap. And I was like, oh, man, I never got to see a game with my dad. But he always wanted a jock, and I was always kind of the artsy guy. And probably his proudest moment of me when he's got to see me play a playoff game in my rec league.
That's right.
And I'm 40 years old, and it's like,
doesn't matter. Still
a kid to him.
There you go.
So anyways, it was a bit of a rough season, and the Avs helped it, and you guys helped it a lot. And Jay, you helped a lot with, you know, making this a thing that not only was like fun to do, but also something I could go, hey, you know, I want to do a show even with all the other crap going on.
Well, I appreciate that. It was fun.
So, yeah, sorry, guys. Get all heavy there. is it time for me to do the spiel now?
If you'd like to do the spiel, I'll do the spiel. You have the green light. Go for it.
You can always find the Avs Hockey Podcast at www.avshockeypodcast.com. You can comment. There's links to subscribe to us in RSS feeds or directly on iTunes, which really is the best way. And we're going to figure out a few other ways of getting it around. You know, we're going to do a little work on that, and we keep talking about it, but, you know, it's time to serious up. This thing is obviously, we're making mad internet dollars off of this thing. It's not true.
Huge money.
Huge, mad, those sweet, sweet internet cash. which, you know, we also make obviously from our curse word gear, because it's just like the best stuff anywhere. I think whatever that dude from that one band was wearing one the other day. I don't know.
He was not.
Whoever that was. Anyways, go to curseword.net if you want to check out the curse word gear. Facebook.com/AvsHockeyPodcast. That's the fan page that Jay runs. And there's always news updates and some sweet, sweet jerseys for you to avoid on eBay, they points out. You can call us at 845-704-RINK. It's 704-7465. There's email. I actually remember this time, avshockeypodcast@gmail.com. There's so many ways of getting in contact with us. Jay is on Twitter at avspodcast. I'm on Twitter at tapeleg. I have, throughout the playoffs, I've been doing the Rink Report, which is a short little podcast, www.rinkpodcast.com/report, or just even rinkpodcast.com. It's a short daily podcast, which I need to record as soon as we're done with this. But let's see, I'm on Twitter, Tape Leg, and I think that's the spiel.
That's the spiel.
Did I get everything out? Because there's a lot.
I think so.
Yeah. All right.
There's like Instagrams too. I'm on the
Instagrams. Oh, yeah. You're on Instagram at Avs Hockey Podcast?
Yeah. Instagram. I don't know. Yeah. You see those on the Twitters, so it doesn't really matter. Yeah. But
however you want to consume this. Oh, how could we forget?
What did we forget?
Hey, thanks everybody for playing Avs Twitter Psychic.
I said that already.
You did?
Yes.
Yeah, I told. Keep I don't saying think
you
it.
Did. No. I want you to say what you need to as well.
I don't think you did.
That I. There's no way for me to track that hashtag and say how many people from this date to this date. There might be a way, and maybe I need to find the tool. Mm-hmm. How many tweets included Avs Twitter Psychic between this date and this date? Because it started in late December, mm-hmm. officially. When I started keeping track of the people right. that I was retweeting.
Did you have a leaderboard? Did you figure
no,
it out?
No, I didn't do that. I'm trying to, there's.
Do you remember how many I had? I think I had like four.
Yeah, right around in there. Four and the average is actually a little bit lower than that. It's pretty interesting. I think it
was up there.
It's
was,
hard. Yeah. It's
I
hard
to
win.
I was close to a winner.
Yeah. It's hard.
I was close to like overall. Champion.
You were closer to a wiener, but,
things suddenly get uncomfortable.
Like they weren't before?
Like it's my, like usually you blame me.
No.
For the uncomfortableness. This one was you.
Totally. I'll take credit for that. But it's just fun. I think we'll definitely keep it going next season. It was just a nice game day tradition. Mm-hmm. Easy to play. Just takes a second to send a tweet. Yep. There's no skill involved at all. I mean, you can always go with McKinnon, O'Reilly, Stastny, kind of Duchesne, but mm-hmm. They score a little more often, but you just never know who's going to score that first half's goal. So. Yep. Just kind of came out of nowhere and was just kind of a fun thing. So, yeah. Thank you for playing. I see.
It was fun.
Hirsch is always, for the most part, I mean, probably 98% of the time, he's the first one. Mm-hmm. So when I'm scrolling back, it's easy for me to figure out exactly old one started and the new one.
I'm going to start picking 2 days before.
You're going to have to get up. You're going to have to get up like at about 4:30 in the morning. But
did not get into theater to get up at 5 in the morning. And yet that's so many times when I do.
That's right.
Anyways.
But, thanks to everybody. This was... I'm glad we finally had another good year and really an unexpected year, and it just felt good to connect with everybody, and we just appreciate your support all around.
Yeah.
And
had a good time as a hockey fan.
Yeah. We'll be back.
In your ear holes.
Yeah, we're always going to be in your ear holes. Touch the iPad. Oh, he's slamming my iPad. Jimmy the Squirrel says thank you as well.
Jimmy the Squirrel.
He's in his fedora over here. I'm thinking we have a couple more shows with us here, yes?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking maybe after free agency, once we have a better idea of what the roster will look like for next year,
absolutely,
maybe we can preview a little bit of that and maybe a season preview-ish. We'll see. But we're going to stay in your ear holes.
Absolutely.
That's about it.
100%.
Yeah.
Right on.
Fist bump?
Fist bump.
One more fist bump. Otherwise, we'll talk to you soon. And again, thank you so much for everything. It's just fun to share this with you. And we appreciate you being a part of it. So until the next time we talk, which will be in a couple months, take care. Let's go, Avs. We'll see you next time on the Avs Hockey Podcast. Later. Hello,
I love a parade. I love a parade.
All the parades in the world.
Okay. Now I've really interrupted you. Now we can move on.
Now it's for sure.
Okay. Space Jam.
It's kind of like how we start.
Let's get Space Jam serious here.
It's Burrito Supremes.
What was the plot of Space Jam?
Then the show.
They were going to lose something over the basketball game, but I can't remember what. Was their planet?
I don't know. They get sucked into the hole, and then it's all Space Jam. Welcome to the Space Jam.
I need more Shaq.